and welcome to First Things First. Happy New Year to you. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Bart Scott is filling in for Chris Carter today. Boys, it is nice to spend the first of the year with both of you.
We all party, man.
Happy New Year,
Mr. Nick Wright.
I saw him at the Shake 'Em Up Club last night.
To the hours of what, 7:30 p.m.?
No, come on. We've been going straight since yesterday.
Straight since yesterday, said none of us. Big show today, kicking off the year right. Eagles could still bring back Carson Wentz. Tom Brady knows how tough the road to the Super Bowl will be, but our very big story this morning, could this be the end of the Triple B's in Pittsburgh? An always dramatic Steelers locker room took an even more dramatic turn yesterday. According to multiple reports, Antonio Brown got into a heated argument with Ben Roethlisberger earlier in the week. He reportedly threw a ball at him, walked off, skipped multiple practices, and did not return for the rest of the week. Antonio Brown did show up to Heinz Field on Sunday, however, expecting to play, and he was told he would not be. He reportedly left at halftime in frustration. All right, Nick, we'll start with you. What is your reaction to the latest in Pittsburgh now?
This is not typical Steelers drama. This is not an example of what Coach Mangini would talk about saying at different families. This is a big deal. This week was a playoff game for Pittsburgh. I know they needed help to get into the playoffs. One thing they knew, if they lost to Cincinnati, their season was over. That means it was a playoff week for them and a playoff game for them. Antonio Brown is the best player on this football team. And I don't the dust up between he and Ben Roethlisberger, I can understand that. There's a circumstance you could present to me where I would say, hey, I might have thrown the ball at him too, depending on how it went down. And I'm sure Bart can elaborate on that. But not showing up to work the following days, forcing Mike Tomlin's hand to where Mike Tomlin had no choice but to bench the best player on his team in their most important game of the year, that's a really big deal and a really bad look for a player in Antonio Brown who has had a really rough season when it comes to things other than catching footballs and catching touchdowns. Those things he's still been great at. This goes back to in the offseason when he's dealing with a lawsuit about allegedly throwing furniture off a balcony and almost striking a toddler down at a pool condo. It was an incident where he skipped a practice after having a dust up after a September 16th loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, these things can't happen from the best player on your team. And Antonio Brown this offseason needs to figure out what type of NFL player he wants to be and what type of career and where he wants that career to be moving forward.
This was ballsy. I mean, I played with some personalities. Rather, you want to go Chris McAllister, Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs. Yep. I've never heard of somebody. Well, one time at Bandcamp, right, with Chris McAllister, he did something. But, this ain't the Chris McAllister show. I've never heard of somebody walking away from practice, not showing up during the week, a pivotal week, to get into the dance. I mean, I don't understand. This tells me, and you hear all the players saying, that's just AB going AB, and I listen to Ryan Clark, and he's talking about, some dust-ups, like, hey, that was the wrong guy to give money. He was yelling at Dick LeBeau, who's a legend, who's not only a football legend, but a Pittsburgh Steelers legend. That just tells me that this guy's been out of control for a long time. And how long has Mike Tomlin been having to deal with this? You talk about the three Bs. You may be down to only one B, because I don't understand how going forward you allow this guy to be a member of your football team. I think already Juju, much like we talked about yesterday with Santonio Holmes and Antonio Brown becoming the number one receiver, I think now Juju, he got the team MVP. But you need your best players to be the best people. We understand he's a hard worker, but you can't be a diva, not to this extent.
And it's selfish.
It's selfish, and he threw the ball at the wrong person. The one person on that team that he probably couldn't win, through ownership is Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben Roethlisberger is bigger than him, and he didn't understand his place on the totem pole. I don't understand how you come back from this, but you can't move him, because what are you going to get for – arguably, yes, the best receiver in the game, but a guy that you just gave a $68 million extension to a couple of years ago.
The problem is you can't move him. Even if someone wants to give you great draft compensation for him, and even if you think Juju is the heir apparent, they gave him that extension February of 2017. But more importantly, they restructured it 1 year in. So this is convoluted salary cap stuff. But what people need to know is this. If they trade or cut Antonio Brown,
right,
they have a $21 million cap hit on next year's cap or over the next 2 years' cap for Antonio Brown. So it's $21 million of a $200 million cap, about 10%, for him not to be on their football team. I don't know that he's diving into the cap figures, but I think he knows he's pretty untouchable. Mike Tomlin, about 3 years ago, when he was asked about some of Antonio's antics, he almost said incredulously to the media, as written about in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette this morning, what do you want me to do? Not play him? And it is an interesting point. Like, what do you do when a player is this good, is consistently this productive? He's 1,400 yards basically every single year. It's tough not to play him. He had to go to this extent to not play him. And even then, the team was covering up for him. Yeah. They were calling this a knee injury up until it got out after the game.
How does a team react to this? How does the rest of your locker room, I mean, I wonder going into Sunday's game how much the whole team actually knew what was going on and how they reacted and how he comes back from this. If he financially can't be moved, how you move on from this and get back on the same page with both Big Ben and the rest of the team.
He's going to have one of those come to Jesus moments and understand. And he can get in front. I mean, the fact that he wasn't even there, you know, when the team were exiting yesterday, he didn't even show up yesterday. The fact that Rooney reached out to him, he didn't return owner's calls. Yep. I mean, I don't know how you come back from this. I mean, sometimes you got to eat that money. And it's more important for you to have a culture because, you know, how do you empower, you know, Tomlin to be able to discipline everybody when we know that AB has his own set of rules? And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this thing is if it's only one B instead of three Bs, then it's time to rebuild and start to think about doing something different in Pittsburgh anyway, especially looking at the rest of the division, seeing where the Ravens are and seeing where the Browns are, what the Browns are doing. You know, we could be witnessing the end of the, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers on top. We may see more of the early Cowher years as opposed to what we become accustomed to seeing.
And it's tough to rebuild, real quick, tough to rebuild with a quarterback going into year 16. A quarterback that is not going to one of these cheap young quarterbacks where you can add a ton of talent and where if you do move Antonio Brown, you get no cap relief from it. But you're in a rough spot, and Tomlin's going to catch a lot of strays on this one, understandably. But the guy you threw the football at is a culture setter
Go back. Why? Because he didn't play him?
Told him to run a route.
She's asking why Tomlin's going to catch him. No, I think people understand him not playing. Okay. I think people are going to blame Tomlin that a situation could get to this point.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how you control a grown man. I don't know how if Antonio Brown, a couple years ago when he was asked about Antonio's end zone celebrations and the penalties, he said, I don't know what you want me to do. Yeah. Like, what do you want me to do other than not play the guy? And I'm obviously going to play the guy. But culture is set typically by two people in an organization, if you're fortunate enough to have two of these people in the organization. An established head coach, they have that. And a Hall of Fame quarterback, they have that. Big Ben's never been held accountable, and that predates Tomlin. Yep. That predates Tomlin coming there, whether it was the motorcycle, whether it was the horrifying allegations at the bar, a couple of those, whether it was continually throwing teammates under the bus.
And coaches under the bus.
Yep. And I'm curious what Big Ben's going to say about 4.5 hours from now when he does that radio show, because I'm sure he'll sound off on this. You have two guys in that organization that have more power than Antonio Brown. One of them, he only has more power almost in title because all he can do is hurt the team by benching him.
Right.
The other one acts a fool nearly as much, and not surprisingly, the other one in Big Ben is the one who the ball got thrown at.
And remember the Facebook thing, right? You know,
sure,
how selfish that was.
He,
you know, intimate setting, an intimate moment where coaches say things that they won't say publicly. He's recording it.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
And also a week ago, we were talking about how this team voted on an MVP. And even though Antonio Brown put up great numbers this year, they voted for Juju Smith-Schuster, which I'm sure he felt. And it's indicative of how this team maybe sees him and sees Ben Roethlisberger.
See, I think that was more – Antonio's won that award voted on by his teammates prior to this year 4 times in the previous 6. And Juju actually had – he didn't have the touchdowns, but he had more yards, more catches than AB. I think that was more a slap at Ben Roethlisberger, who hadn't won it once since 2009 and has only won it once ever. That team MVP that the team never votes on the quarterback, who has been for a long time either the best or the second best player on the team, that's an interesting part of the Steelers as well.
All right, we'll take a break, but it will be interesting to hear if Big Ben does speak today what he has to say about other things. Probably throw us under the bus just while he's throwing people. Coming up, are the Eagles making a mistake sticking with Nick Foles? Happy New Year's Day, everyone. This is First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Nick Foles and the Eagles in just a second. But first, Gator Bowl down in Jacksonville. C.J. Riley of NC State makes a great catch for the touchdown, Nick.
Oh, one-handed.
Moss. Whenever somebody do that, you just say Moss.
But Moss is more like going over the top of the guy, right? No. This is extending to the back. Well, go ahead.
Moss is anything that's dynamic. Moss. It's funny. It was Moss ever since I was in the league, man. Moss.
Sticking with college football, trick play in the Holiday Bowl. Northwestern offensive lineman Trey Clark catches the pass, dives across the goal line. Watch it again for the 20-yard touchdown. Here you go.
We call that a business decision. That DB was like, I want no smoke. I want no smoke.
That reminded me of what the Patriots pulled out in the playoffs against the Ravens years ago, that the Ravens were saying that was cheating on, where they have the guy eligible out to the side. You don't think he's eligible. Look at that.
Illegal,
Fat man touchdown.
And then he has a 39, so it's difficult. I thought that was Jerry Lorenzen running down for a route.
On to the NBA. Magic, Hornets, second-year guard Malik Monk takes off.
Levitation.
Oh, my. I didn't see this last night. Now, Malik Monk, I thought he'd be better already. I thought he was a steal they got in last year's draft. His rookie year didn't go quite according to plan, but look at that.
I just get it, jump like fella. That in the 90s, man.
You could never jump like that, Bart.
Mavs Thunder, Russell Westbrook throws the alley-oop to Jeremy Grant, one of Westbrook's 11 assists last night.
Really good win by the Thunder last night. Dominated this game start to finish. Hey, Bart, do you know where Jeremy Grant went to college?
No, but I hated his dad, his uncle.
Oh, Horace and Harvey?
I'm a bad boy Pistons fan, so I hated it.
Oh, okay. The answer, by the way, is went to Syracuse, like so many great NBA players. Go get it, Jeremy Grant.
Moving on to the Eagles, let's talk some football again. And the most popular backup quarterback in the league, Nick Foles. He did win their last three games, and he did get them into the playoffs. And while Carson Wentz still hasn't been ruled out for the postseason, some are wondering if Philly should stick with Nick. We wonder that every day. Doug Peterson was asked about this yesterday.
Is it fair to say or safe to say that Nick's going to be a quarterback as long as you win?
For this week.
Is there any scenario where...
There's no guarantee we're going to win this game.
I understand. I'm just saying if.
You know. Yeah, I'll evaluate next Monday.
You started this.
Yeah, right. I know. Thanks for trying.
They did try. You know me. You know how I feel about my local media. They almost got it from him. Bart, what do you think? Should the Eagles stick with Foles or you go back to Wentz as soon as he's cleared to play?
You stick with what's working. You know, the reason that they're on this run has been because Nick Foles was inserted into the starting lineup. Like I said before, he energizes this team. He puts this, you know, this offense in a rhythm and a pace. And they have chemistry. Him and Doug Peterson have some type of chemistry where he understands how to get the best out of Nick Foles. The offense, Alshon Jeffries. The only person that's probably upset is Ertz because he was getting all that work when it was Wentz. But now everybody's alive. Everybody, you know, it's run the ball. Shots. And, you know, whenever you do that, you have an opportunity to get these big explosive plays, you know, the time of possession, their control and everything. If he's able to put this team on a run, and like I said, they don't have to go to the Super Bowl, you have real legitimate questions about who's the best quarterback for this team going forward.
Well, when we talk about the best quarterback for this team, it reminds me of something Chris says all the time about players. Says 99% of guys in this league are system players. Well, let's just look at that the other way around. What teams are system fits for certain players better than others? I'm not ready to say that with Philly yet. I'm not. I know that they are on another seemingly magical run, but it's not as if with Carson Wentz we haven't seen them be great. We saw them be great, the best team in football for the first 13 games of last year. We saw this year, while the team as a whole struggled, Carson's numbers were actually quite good. His numbers this year are actually comparable to what they were last year pre-injury. But as far as for the rest of this season, Nick Foles is the only quarterback who should play for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's also for Carson Wentz's benefit. I want to. The worst thing that can happen to Carson Wentz is the Eagles upset the Bears, which is the only way this is a discussion, right? Because we know Foles playing this week.
And then he's healthy.
And then they're like, hey, Carson, guess what? You get to play on the road against the number one seed New Orleans Saints. And that game, the Eagles, if they are to get past the Bears, which is a long shot, no matter who the quarterback is, they are an enormous underdog. They will be a greater than touchdown underdog in New Orleans, no matter who. New Orleans is the overwhelming favorite, not only to get to the Super Bowl, but to win it.
And it hurts Wentz if they lose to the
Saints. If they lose under his watch.
Yeah.
If Foles gets to stay undefeated in these must-win games, what Carson Wentz needs to happen to have all of this go away is for Nick Foles to lose a playoff game. Like, I mean, that is because, yes, of course. Well, if Carson takes over and they go win a Super Bowl, is that the best? Yeah. Sure. But this team, I don't believe, is good enough to win three consecutive road playoff games, no matter who the quarterback is. So the worst thing that could happen to Wentz and his future in Philly is to get put back in that starting lineup.
But if Nick Foles plays well and they lose, the questions are still going to be there that maybe, you know, because they have to make a decision, because I believe his cap hit is like $20 million.
It's a $20 million team option.
So they're going to let Nick Foles walk away. And then if he goes somewhere and thrives and Carson Wentz can never get them back to the dance, and they're going to say, what if? Because he's a 29-year-old free agent with experience and a Super Bowl MVP.
So, listen, if he plays well and they lose, let's go with that, he being Nick Foles.
Against the Bears
or even against, let's say they beat the Bears, okay. Even against the Saints. Either way, they will let him walk because they've got no choice. Right. Like, they're not going to pick up a $20 million option. They are cap-strapped as is. This Eagles team does not have a lot of room to maneuver. That's without his $20 million option. And then even if there are people on television, even if there are fans, like, did we keep the wrong guy? It's not the same because he's not in the locker room anymore. There's not going to be the question if they struggle to start next year, should you go to Foles? Because he's going to be playing for Jacksonville or Denver or whomever the hell he's going to be playing for. So this will fix itself. This will it will figure itself out. The only way it doesn't is if it figures itself out in a different direction, which is they beat the Bears and they beat the Saints. And then there is a real question about which quarterback do you move on from? But we are, to me, a ways away from that, Bart.
I know you're saying he's not a system guy, but somehow Alshon Jeffrey plays better with him, and Nelson Aguilar plays better with him, and he seems to work under the Doug Peterson tutelage of how he wants to run that offense better with Nick Foles. So if you take him out of it, do you have to change all of that and the coaching staff's direction to bring Carson Wentz back in and make him successful, or do you keep everything the way it is with Foles?
I think when Carson Wentz comes in, I think they need to scale him back a little bit, because I feel like they thought that he was going to be able to pick up where he left off at that MVP form. And that just wasn't the case. He had a bit of a sophomore slump, but, you know, all things weren't equal. They didn't have the same pieces they had before. I think losing Jay Ajayi really hurt Carson Wentz and what he was able to do. He's a totally different quarterback. He's more mobile. He's a guy that can buy time outside of the pocket, make those off-schedule plays, something that Nick Foles really doesn't do. He's more of a rhythm passer, a rhythm thrower, that back foot hits and he's going to make a decision with the football. You know, I feel like coming back, they're going to have to make some decisions to try and tweak this lineup, but they don't have a lot of flexibility because they have a lot of guys that's going to be pending. They have a lot of high-priced free agents. They got to make a decision. You know, Peters is a Hall of Famer, but they instead of letting him go to get some type of salary cap relief, they paid him some more. So they're going to have to make some decisions going forward. They were all in this year, bringing in Haloti Ngata, bringing in, you know, Bennett, so that they can try and make another run. But if they fall short, they're going to have to make some decisions, and Nick Foles is going to be one of them.
I just don't think we should act as if we've never seen this Eagles offense perform at a high level with Carson Wentz. We have. We saw it perform at a high level for 12 and a half games last year under Carson Wentz. The entire team was underachieving for the first 13 games of this season, two of which were quarterbacked by Nick Foles. Now, what has happened these last 3 weeks, I love it. Like, I don't have a rooting interest on the NFC side of the bracket, but the most interesting thing is the Eagles keep winning. I root for, it's a steal line from Colin Cowherd, I root for interesting. Like, the most interesting thing is that we get a Drew Brees-Nick Foles matchup in the Superdome in New Orleans, and we see what happens. And if that does come to pass, then you do have to start asking really tough questions. And we're not even mentioning, even if Wentz is better, how much of an injury risk is a guy who was injured his last year in college, who had a massive leg injury last season,
and
is in with a back injury now? But if this goes the way Vegas says it's going to go, which is the Bears win this game by about a touchdown, then you know who you go with? The bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic, stronger
Your
arm,
franchise
number
guy.
Two overall pick.
Yeah, gave him a lot for him.
Right, and by the way, this could work out great for Nick Foles. He has an option. He will be with. He saw how Teddy Bridgewater played in Week 17. It does. We don't know what any of the if Flacco's getting cut. Is he gonna what the market for him will be? Nick Foles might get his own team next year and see if this magic is transferable.
Quickly, who do you think the players in that locker room would like to quarterback their team on Sunday?
I think they like Wentz, but I think they love Nick Foles. I think he's just a guy that you root for. For everything that I hear, that he's a leader, he's fun to be around, and you root for guys. Yeah, everybody loves the underdog.
I think the guys in the locker room know Wentz is better. I think the guys in the locker room would be furious if Nick Foles got benched during this run. I think there is the feeling of
so
running, run with the hot hand.
Yeah.
Go with what's working. Like, to cross sports just for a moment, it's like there are sometimes NBA teams go on a run in a fourth quarter with their best player on the bench. Everyone knows the best player's on the bench, but you don't want to upset the right. rhythm of what's going on. Take that to just week to week with the playoffs. And they know the stage isn't going to be too big next week or the week after for Nick Foles. The one of the question marks for Carson Wentz, as is the case with Mahomes, with Watson, with Trubisky,
playoff
is playoff
experience.
He doesn't have any. We know the stage won't be too big for Foles.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, who's more important to the Cowboys' playoff success? Is it Dak? Is it Zeke? What are they going to have to do to face a tough Seattle team? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it is a Big Ten showdown on Fox as Michigan State hits the hardwood against the conference foe, Ohio State. Catch it all at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral on this New Year's Day. Pat Mahomes threw a beautiful 89-yard pass to DeMarcus Robinson on Sunday to give him 50 passing touchdowns this season. Came as a big surprise to Chiefs punter Dustin Colquitt. Take a listen.
Now back-to-back drops by Conley and Kelsey makes it third and long and really puts him in a tough spot. Yeah.
Third and 10, Mahomes, straight drop. Stepping up and throwing long. Has a man downfield and he's got it! DeMarcus Robinson!
Wow, this is unreal. I mean, I thought for sure I was going to punt. I got to get my gloves. This is ridiculous, man. Oh, my gosh. Dude, this is crazy. Are you guys kidding me? Are you kidding? What?
It took me a while to figure out that it was him that was talking.
Oh, yeah. He thought he's the punter.
Yeah.
So it's third and long from their own 11. He's like, I'm going to have to go punt. And now he has to run all the way to the other side of the field because he's the holder for the extra point.
Such a punter, man. Sitting out there, Wally looking like Willie Beeman out there.
Beeman, I told you to get your helmet 20 seconds ago. He doesn't need the gloves to punt. He thought he was going to be punting. That was a great moment for Mahomes to eclipse the 50-touchdown mark. He had just gone over 5,000 yards passing. That was his final touchdown pass of what should be a unanimous MVP season, will be an MVP season for Patrick Mahomes.
If he can take this thing and keep this momentum, a legend, a star has already been born, but a legend is born if he's able to go to the Super Bowl and do some magic.
Last quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs to win a playoff game in Arrowhead was a different legend. His name was Joe Montana.
Yeah.
25 years ago. Pat Mahomes is going to have an opportunity in about 12 days to put add his name to that very short list.
All right, moving on. Time for stories to start your morning. The NFL playoffs are here, and Vegas gives the New Orleans Saints the best odds to win Super Bowl 53. All right, Nick, listen closely. The Saints are plus 225, which means if you bet $100, you win 225.
Good job, Jenna.
Let me go through that one more time.
No, don't worry about that.
All right, Bart, you agree the Saints should be the favorites to win it all?
I think so because they have, they got a style that can travel even though it's going to go through the Superdome, but they have, Super Bowl experience and they have playmakers at every level, whether it's offensively, defensively. They can run, ground and pound you. They can take the air out of the game, but also they can beat you over the top. It's going to be interesting to see, if Ted Ginn can really, provide what they need, that deep threat, that explosive player, because Michael Thomas is a good player, but he's not the vertical threat that Ted Ginn can present and open everything up in the middle.
It's not surprising the two biggest favorites are the one seeds. They should be the biggest favorites. The Saints are the top favorite, the Chiefs right after them. What the Saints have that the Chiefs don't is they don't have a glaring weakness. The right. Chiefs have a glaring weakness. It's not their history. It's their defense. The Saints should be the favorite. I think most people would be very surprised if the Saints don't at least make it to the Super Bowl. I don't know if the same can be said about any team out of the AFC.
Yeah.
All right, sticking with the NFL, yesterday four more teams fired their coaches. So now the Dolphins, Broncos, Bengals, and Cardinals have head coaching vacancies, bringing the grand total to eight teams. Nick, what's your reaction to a quarter of the league having head coaching vacancies?
It's no problem. These teams are just going to go to the head coaching tree, pluck off a guy. I mean, where do they think these good coaches are going to come from? And what they did in Arizona with Steve Wilks is an embarrassment. To fire a guy after 1 year when the quarterback he thought he was going to play got hurt. Sam Bradford got hurt. You have Josh
surprise,
Rosen who's
way.
Not
Very
right
shocked.
Who's not ready yet, and to fire him after 1 year, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't know where these great coaches are going to come from. I know that this is where we're at. Adam Gase gets fired and immediately goes to the top of the list of available candidates because there aren't enough head coaches to go around, evidently.
It's just the good old boys club, and it's rarely any new blood infused into head coaching. Usually you go from coordinator to coach, back to coordinator, back to position coach, back to head coach. And it just goes on and on, and eventually you get cycled out with the Brian Billicks, with the Fossils of the world, but then you continue to come back. Hell, throw Rex's name in there. Might as well.
Rex, I think, will take either Miami job. He wanted the Miami college job. It's gone now. Now the head coach job.
All right, on to the NBA, where James Harden has been on fire. Old school NBA Jam, Nick. He dropped 43 last night. I actually knew what that was.
He's on fire.
His fourth straight 40-point game. So the Rockets have now won 10 of their last 11. Nick, put Harden's hot streak in perspective for us.
I mean, it's as far as scoring-wise, it is. I tweeted this last night. It's accurate. In modern NBA history, you can count on less than one hand how many guys have done this over this long of a stretch. He's done it. Jordan did it in the late 80s, and Kobe did it in his 35-point-per-game season. Like, that's the list of guys who have done this basically in the modern NBA. And he's, by the way, doing it while averaging nearly double-digit assists. His team is winning. It is as good of an offensive stretch over a month of basketball as we have seen since Wilt Chamberlain.
You can make the argument that he could have been the MVP for the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people are really starting to accept his game and understand, what he brings to the table. The fact that he's able to be a scoring point guard, so to speak. Just imagine, if they would have been the first big three and they would have kept him instead of going with Serge Ibaka and what they could have had in OKC. They messed up.
All right, let's talk about LeBron James for a second. Still one of the game's greatest players in year 16. That's according to basketball pundits. But it's also according to LeBron James, apparently. He recently laid out what he believes was his defining moment in the NBA. It was beating the Warriors in the 2016 finals. Here's what LeBron said that moment meant to him.
That one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
That's what I felt. For so many reasons.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years. Everything in sports had gone on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time. Everybody was just talking how they were the greatest team of all time. Like, they was the greatest team to ever assemble. And for us to come back, the way we came back in that fashion, I was like, you did something special. That's probably one of the only times in my career I felt like, oh, like you did something special. I haven't really had time to really like sit back and think, but that was a moment. Crazy.
All right, Nick, you agree with LeBron? Would you look back on that and say that was the moment?
That's the exact moment, and he's exactly right, because up until that run, LeBron was already, as far as individual statistics, on pace to become probably the greatest individual statistical player ever. It's going to be him, Kareem, and Wilt. Like, that was it. But what he didn't have was the overall team success. And what that Game 7 of that 2016 NBA Finals did was it cemented or put a cap on the greatest five-year run any basketball player has ever had. Like, here's the five-year run. He ended the original big three in Boston with a 45-15-5 on the road, down 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then beat the team that Bart was talking about could have become the big three, KD, Russ, and Harden, in the NBA Finals. The next year, his team won 27 straight games. He won not only MVP again for the fourth time, but Game 7 of the NBA Finals, hit the jump shot to seal it in a 37-12 game. The following year, went back to the Finals, averaged 28 a game on 57%, and the guy guarding him got Finals MVP. The next year, went back to the Finals, with his second-best player being Matthew Dellavedova, and the guy guarding him won Finals MVP, despite LeBron going 36-13-9 for the NBA Finals. And then that year, down 3-1 against a 73-win team, without home court advantage, with everything stacked against him, he goes 41-16-7, 41-8-11, and then 27-11-11 in a game where he hit the free throw to ice the game and had the single greatest defensive play in the history of the sport. That is the best five-year run in the history of the game, and that run made him the greatest player in the history of the game. It's not – what's up, Bart?
Best five-year run ever?
Yeah, tell me a better five-year run.
How about MJ from 90 to 98?
Okay, but that's – here's
running
the run.
Right, and he took a year off. If he didn't take a year off, he would have won 7 in a row.
Okay, well, so find me the 5 years, Bart.
And let's talk about the assist that he got from the NBA – because they suspended, you know, they suspended Draymond Green. How about that one?
You know, it's a really good point, because the game without Draymond, he scored 41 points. And then Draymond was back for game 6, and he scored 41 points. And Draymond was there for game 7, and he had a triple-double to win it.
It would have never went that far. If you know the NBA.
Well, tell Draymond to keep his hands to
himself. They put one in. They put one out, man. Come on.
But you said,
I give him some credit, because he took Cleveland. You know, he won a championship for Cleveland, mm-hmm. which that we know how difficult that is. But him saying he's the greatest player of all time, come on.
Well, you said,
come on, son.
You mentioned Jordan. Jordan didn't have a five-year stretch better than that. There's no five-year stretch any player has ever had where they've won more than three finals MVPs.
Are we both using...
There isn't one.
Are we both using the same things to determine what makes the best player? You're using more
stats. It's not numbers, man. You talk about fluffed up numbers, man. Of course, it's a different game. It's a different era.
Okay.
So, of course, you can put up more numbers and more statistics, especially when you're the biggest player on the court and nobody can't stop you and you can run through. Yeah, I mean, MJ played in an era where it was more skill, I believe, in NBA per player, and it was a more of a physical type of game. It was a more slowed down pace. And listen,
I just want to make sure I understand just real quick, because the point you just made was LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, right? And not the center.
And the rules are offensively slack.
Okay, so LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, yet he wouldn't have thrived in an era that rewarded physicality?
No, he could have. But tell me this. Okay. What great player did LeBron deny a championship to?
Kevin Durant, he did it.
He got it eventually.
Okay, no.
Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, all sitting ringless because of MJ.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But you asked who he denied a championship to. He beat Kawhi Leonard for a championship, beat Tim Duncan for a championship, beat Kevin Durant for a championship.
Lost to Dirk Nowitzki.
James Harden, absolutely. And that's what made that run so impressive.
He ran to the West to run away from the Golden State Warriors trying to get Anthony Davis to come because he needed help.
He ran from the West to run away from the Warriors. I don't know how that makes sense. However, the Nowitzki finals, the Mavs finals, is the lowest point for any all-time great player ever. The problem for people that want to deny what they're seeing is what he followed that up with is the greatest five-year stretch. Anybody's pick your favorite player. None of them have more finals MVPs over 5 years than LeBron did in that stretch. None of them have a more impressive individual or team resume than LeBron does over that stretch. You say LeBron ran to the West. Why did Jordan not win 8 straight? He left the sport, right?
Yeah.
And then the one he came, did he leave for 2 full years or a year and a half? Year and a half, right? Because when he came back, he played that season. Something happened. They didn't win the championship.
Let's see. 6 is greater than 3, right?
Yeah. Oh, listen, you can always count the rings. You can always do the argument of count the rings, but in that case, then it's Russell number 1. Kareem and Jordan are tied. Robert Horry's got to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Like, there's some guys that drove the bus and there's some guys that were passing.
So Bill Russell is without question the greatest player of all time. Without question, he's 11 of them.
He's the greatest winner of all time.
Okay, so
George boasts the best. You know, he's the
Jordan's
best,
both
best player. He's
got
the best
it.
Player.
Okay.
No, he's Good the best know. Player of all time.
LeBron got that right.
All right.
No, liar.
LeBron got that right.
No.
Jenna?
Why don't we do something where we can both agree? Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. They took care of business in Week 17. Good win for the team. Good performance from the quarterback, Dak Prescott. Prescott will need another one next week against the Seahawks. He'll also need Ezekiel Elliott. So Zeke won the rushing title despite sitting out Sunday's game. His head coach, Jason Garrett, said the move keeps him, quote, fresher going forward. Bart, what do the Cowboys need out of Zeke if they're going to go ahead and beat this Seattle Seahawks team?
They need him to set the tone. They're on the, like I said, Ezekiel Elliott's on a collision course with Bobby Wagner. He's going to have to put his foot in his chest. He's going to have to say, foot in chest, repeat. They're going, listen, the only way you beat a team like the Seattle Seahawks is to out-physical them, right? And you got it. You can't try and run around them. You can't try and gadget them. It's only one thing they respect, physicality. You got to say, listen, this is going to be one of these in the phone booth type of games. You're going to have to set the tone. You set the tone early in practice by saying, listen, this is the game plan. We're coming downhill. We're putting the ball on our best player. We're going to take shots. That's the only chance they have, because if they try and not stick to their identity, who they are, then the advantage is going to go to the Seattle Seahawks.
And here's the other thing. They need Zeke to be great. And he, by the way, since the Titans game, he's had 100 yards from scrimmage in every single game leading into Week 17 where he didn't play. He has been great. But they don't only need him to be great to score. They need him to be great to keep their defense, the Dallas defense, off the field. Because quietly, this last month, that Dallas defense, it really did peak with that Saints performance. And since then, it's been leaking a little bit of oil. They've given up 23, 23, 20, and 35 points in their final month of football. So I don't know that you can just say, our defense is going to hold Seattle down to 16 points. We're only going to need 17 to win. I think Dallas has to look at this game saying, we're probably going to need 27 points to win this football game, and we're going to have to keep Seattle's offense off the field, because Russell Wilson has shown time and again this year in his career, he's a great fourth quarter quarterback, right? That the playoffs, that fourth quarter can be the entire game. He has the ability to be a drop back 40 times a game passer if they need him to be. So that's why Zeke's got to keep them off the field.
Do you trust, though, that if they do find themselves far behind, that Dak will go out there and maybe can just from what you've seen in the last couple weeks, can start getting them back into it?
Well, this is going to be on Scott Linehan, right? He's going to have to try and design some explosive plays. Understanding that Seattle at his core is a cover three team, they're going to have to move Amari Cooper around so that they can't get that, you know, high safety third cornerback on top of him and take him away. They're going to have to put him in a slot, because what kills cover three is four verticals, right? It forces you to have to communicate. It forces one of those safeties to have to say, I have to carry a receiver. And it's going to be up to Dak to find that safety that's carrying the receiver. They don't have a Cam Chancellor. They don't have an Earl Thomas. They have backups and replacements for those guys. That's where you're going to have opportunities to get your shots. Not on the outside. I think that Seattle's solid on the outside. They're going to play so deep. You're going to get those opportunities in the slot.
The Chargers, the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, these are all teams that this year have shown they can fall down by multiple scores and come back to tie a game, come back to take a lead, come back to win a game. The Cowboys and the Ravens are the two teams in this tournament that I would say if at any point they're down 10 points, the game's over. Yeah. I don't think they have a path to victory where they can come back from double digits down. Like anybody, you can get down a touchdown, no problem. But if you are down multiple scores, what that allows you to do, because it removes the Cowboys' running game to a degree, it puts the onus on Zeke, and it allows a team like Seattle just say, oh, this is perfect. All we want to do is run the ball anyway.
Right.
I saw Seattle in a game against the Rams. They almost came back to win. 5 minutes left, down 12, running the football because it's who they are. That's down 12. What are they going to do if they get up 12? They're just going to run the football. So, no, I do not think they have the firepower if they get down multiple scores to come back. But nobody wants to be down multiple scores. Dallas is at home. Dallas is the favorite. Dallas should be in position where this is a three-point game one way or another the whole game. They got arguably the best kicker in the playoffs on the NFC side in Brett Maher, a guy they cut Dan Bailey to keep, and it's been proven right. Have it come down to something like that, because they're not going to win a shootout and they're not going to have a great comeback victory.
All right. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, happy.
MJ, I got you, baby.
I know you
do. Send me a pair of kicks.
Coming up, the drama in Pittsburgh. You see why you went there?
Shoes better than LeBron James.
Even more strange. That's ahead on First
Things
First.
That is true. Michael Jordan, greatest marketer of all time. There's no question about it.
Back here on First Things first, CBS Sports Radio host Damon Amendola joins us now. Good morning, Damon.
DA.
Happy New Year.
What up, brother?
How we doing?
We are doing great. Thanks for being with us.
I know this guy.
I
know this
guy.
Wow.
Good stuff. All right, Damon, let's talk about the Patriots. They ended the 2018 season on a high note, beating the brakes off the New York Jets. The months prior, however, more of a medium note, low note, not great, but also not an issue since they still earned themselves a bye for the ninth straight season. Tom Brady says he knows the Patriots will have to be at their very best heading into the postseason.
This time of year, it's just figuring out a way to get the job done. You know, there's a lot of good football teams playing right now. You know, some teams have played better early in the year. Some teams have played better late in the year. And, you know, this time of year, it's you don't play a good game, and that's your season. And you're watching other teams move on. The awareness is heightened. The focus is heightened. The execution needs to be that way. And, you know, we have a big challenge. Whoever we play is going to be a great football team. We're not going to be able to afford anything less than our best.
All right, Damon, it's going to be a bit of an uphill road, I think, for the Patriots, despite all the success they've had. How slim is the Patriots' margin of error this postseason?
Extraordinarily slim. I would say the only reason I gave them any chance to go to the Super Bowl is because they got the bye. Look, in the Super Bowl era of Belichick and Brady, they've never played wild card weekend and gotten to the Super Bowl. What did that tell you? They've got to get the rest. They've got to get home field advantage. They've got to play Gillette Stadium, where quirky, interesting, scary, spooky things tend to happen
sure.
to opponents.
Headsets go out.
It's interesting how that always seems to happen. So that's the only reason that I say that they can make it is because they get the bye. And with the Chiefs, you never know. If they lose a divisional round game, which they are certainly prone to do over the course of their history, the Patriots suddenly host both games of the playoffs, and then we see them in the Patriots potentially in the Super Bowl again. But this Patriots team, this is fool's gold at the end of the season, week 16, week 17. They beat up on a couple of rookie quarterbacks, a couple of bad AFC East divisional opponents, and went out in style against a coach that's not coming back in Todd Bowles. So if you think that the Patriots got healthy suddenly, I think you're whistling past the graveyard. The Patriots truly are the team that struggled against the Steelers, that got blown up by the Lions, that got blown up by the Titans, that got blown up by the Jaguars. They're just not the same team they have been in recent years. And this reminds me, I was covering the Patriots in Boston in 2009 when they ended up going 10-6 and losing the wild card round of the Ravens. That was a season earmarked by a lot of mile markers over the course of the season where you said, this doesn't feel like the Patriots. They had a couple of guys, Adalia Thomas, who Bart knows very well, and Randy Moss show up late to practice. There was a snowstorm late in the season. Belichick sent them all home, said, don't even come to practice. And that became kind of a big deal, like, wow, what's going on? This stuff never happens in Patriot land. And I feel the same way. There's not the same type of friction with the coaching staff, but there was a sense all that year in 09, this team just isn't right. And they lost in the wild card round, and it just felt like, okay, they've got to reset, and they did after that. That was the last season to me that made them feel this vulnerable.
And just the numbers, that's the last season they had this many losses in a year. That's the last season
correct.
That Brady was this statistically mediocre in a year. There's a lot. The case for the Patriots is a simple one. They're undefeated at home. They are guaranteed to play at least one, and if they get past that one, maybe both playoff games at home. And in a conference where seemingly nobody's got playoff experience, like look at who those other quarterbacks are. You have Rivers and Luck as the 5 and the 6 seed, but Watson and Mahomes
Jackson.
And Lamar Jackson, they have a guy who has more experience than basically the rest of the field combined times two. That's the case. But if you're just watching them, there isn't really a great case. If you're just watching them, the case is, it's the NFL playoffs, anything can happen. They don't do anything great. That's their biggest weakness. Their biggest weakness isn't like the Chiefs, where they have a glaring weakness of defense. Their biggest weakness is you game plan for the Patriots, and nothing jumps off the pages. Well, this scares us. We have to make sure we stop this. I thought that would be Gronk. It hasn't been Gronk all year. They lost Josh Gordon. There's no real difference maker.
It's not even Brady.
It's not even Brady. Now, Brady will always scare you to a degree because he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't think we're going to disagree on that greatest of all time discussion.
Never mind.
Sure. But they, if they didn't have the jerseys on, they would look like the longest shot in the AFC playoff field right now.
But what scares me is they have versatility. They've been together for so long. So you think about Bill Belichick, you think about Tom Brady, what they can do is make you fight left-handed. So they're going to take away your best weapon, what you do well. And you have to be able to say, okay, I'm going to be able to counterpunch. And, you know, it's really the game within the game, the chess pieces that you have to be able to move when you want to try and come out and change your game plan. The teams that I believe has always beat the Patriots, and they had two game plans going in. They had the first half things, and then they had the things that they adjusted to in the second half.
What the Jags couldn't do last year.
To keep them off balance, because what we know that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady does well is they understand the situation. They understand, you know, they'll get you with a trick play. They'll try and score before the half. They'll try and come out and get up by two and force you to press. And then especially when you look at this young field of young quarterbacks, if they have those early mistakes where Bill can set a trap for you and you can fall for it, will you be able to recover from that? Because in the playoffs, the clock moves so fast. Everything is sped up in your heart rate and in the whole atmosphere. And you have to get past the mystique of what it is to play in Gillette Stadium. It can be intimidating.
Is experience a big enough factor where it could, you know, sort of make up for whatever they're lacking on offense or defense? I mean, we talk all the time about how the Chiefs have it all in this offense except no experience. I mean, do you think that's enough to hold them back and experience is enough to propel the Patriots forward?
Yes, because the Patriots have a very obvious game plan for themselves. Do not beat ourselves. Let the other team beat themselves. And that seems to happen all of the time. And they're really good at this. They will not turn the football over. They won't make mental miscues. They won't miss tackles or assignments. And that means you've got to be perfect. And especially at Gillette Stadium, it makes it really hard on opponents that haven't been there before. History, though, also tells us the Patriots are not winning the Super Bowl this year. We have not had a team lose a Super Bowl and come back to win one the following year since 1972, the undefeated Dolphins. Oh, wow. That's the last time this has happened. What does that tell us? It took historically perhaps the greatest team ever, at least one of them, to overcome what the emotional down is after you go all the way to the Super Bowl and then lose it, and then try to come back and do it again. The Patriots' history tells us they're not nearly as good as the 72 Dolphins. They're good, but they're just going to be the beneficiary of a very inexperienced AFC and a couple of home games potentially, but I don't see them getting to Atlanta.
But the other thing that has to concern you if you're a Pats fan is they had a few moments this season where they could have righted the ship, where where it looked like, as long as we win this game, we're going to be the 2 seed and we're going to be okay. And they couldn't win that game. Now, they got the 2 seed anyway because Houston down the stretch tripped up a couple times unexpectedly. The loss to Philly, a loss to India a couple weeks prior to that. But the Dolphins game was the Patriots making a mistake that they typically don't make. And then they got a reprieve. And they got the Steelers game the next week. And they made one play the entire game on a busted coverage to Chris Hogan. Like, I would have more faith in the Patriots, even if they hadn't gotten the 2 seed, if down the stretch it had all come together. It didn't all come together. That even the Bills game they didn't play very well in. Now, the Jets game they played spectacularly. I will give them all the credit. But that was a lot about the opponent and a lot about the venue and a lot about guys getting ready for the offseason. The Patriots have had opportunities this year to say, oh, they're figuring it out. Like a few years ago when I thought the defense was a disaster, and then by December it's like, oh, in December, number one scoring defense in football. They haven't shown that to me. Maybe they'll make me look stupid this year. Maybe it's going to be like, oh, my God, you picked against the Patriots. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're talented enough.
It's going to be about the matchups, right? Because I can see a guy like Lamar Jackson going in there, maybe having some pivotal fumbles, some turnovers, sure, things of that sort, which can get that momentum. And then you look up, like, how do we lose to this team? I can see Deshaun Watson doing the same. They won't lose, I don't think, to one of the younger quarterbacks. I think who they should fear, like I said, who I believe is going to be in the Super Bowl, is going to be that 4th, 5th, and 6th seed. You know, I know that 6th seed, you know, that.
So Colts, Chargers, Ravens, right, are you think the 3 best teams?
Because Harbaugh doesn't fear, you know, the Pats, and they understand they have a history of being successful. They know how to beat them. And also the veteran quarterbacks, I think, can outduel Tom Brady. I don't know if Mahomes can come up to it. They've already lost to him this year, and I don't know if Deshaun Watson can step up.
They've
either.
Already lost to him this year as well.
And Watt becomes a non-factor. I don't know what they have on J.J. Watt. I don't know if he's ever sacked Tom Brady in his career.
But the Chiefs and Texans lost really close against the Patriots. And remember, Deshaun almost went up there last year and beat them at Gillette Stadium. Yeah. It can be done by those
and
guys.
And the Chiefs had beat them the previous couple years, right, once in Gillette.
No
defense. Stick around,
though.
Do another segment?
Let's do it, yeah.
Because I hold all the cards, and I made that decision. Coming up, the latest strange twist with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Next! on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Damon Amendola, new year, old problems for the Steelers. Damon, according to multiple reports, Antonio Brown got into a heated argument with Ben Roethlisberger earlier this week. Brown reportedly threw a ball at Big Ben, walked off, skipped multiple practices, did not return all week. He did show up at Heinz Field on Sunday, however, expecting to play and was told he would not be playing. He reportedly left at halftime in frustration. All right, Damon, what's your reaction to the latest drama in Pittsburgh?
Look, I don't know who's nursing hangovers watching us right now, so I won't scream, but this is the most Steelers thing ever. Right. Like, the most talented team potentially on paper coming into the season, at least offensively, ends up missing the postseason because time after time after time, they just kick the bucket. They just keep messing up. And for week 17, knowing you have to win, you absolutely have to win, and you must lean on your best players, and that includes Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown first and foremost. For Brown to be so self-involved, so self-indulgent, yes, to have to throw a ball back at his quarterback because he's upset that, what, Juju is getting more attention or was voted team captain, it is just so silly and petulant to do that in a must-win situation and then be benched by the coach and then have to lie about it. They've got to lie about why he was benched, only for it to all come out. I like Mike Tomlin. I don't believe he should be fired. But this is such a poor referendum on Tomlin's leadership, on Antonio Brown's maturity, and the culture of the entire Steelers locker room.
I mean, they've been getting passes for so long because I can't believe that this is the first time. Whenever Ryan Clark goes on TV and says this is AB being AB and he thought that he was the wrong guy to get paid, well, that just tells me that they have a bad culture and they have a bad locker room, and then you want to add Le'Veon Bell and that whole situation to the mix. They have to really have a meeting about what they're going to do going forward because you can't get rid of them. So what are you going to do? How do you fix this situation? I'm surprised that somebody hasn't EK Apollo this guy and punched him in the face because I can't imagine that he hasn't pulled this stick on some cornerback that was trying to, you know, guard him too hard in practice or something like that.
But I'll ask you, Bart, with a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and a quarterback that has won a Super Bowl and a coach, how does it happen that guys within the locker room don't care enough to need to win Week 17, need to, the desire to get there? Why does selfishness like this happen?
I think there was an element with the Steelers, because if you remember during the Le'Veon Bell saga, there was one guy that consistently had L. Bell's back. That was Antonio Brown. I think there was this feeling amongst certain Steelers, not many, but certain Steelers, that you know what? You know when the team gave up on this season? When they didn't bring back the best running back in football or one of the best running backs in football. And you know why we've struggled this year? Why we went from 7-2-1 down to the playoffs? Our running game ran into a wall. And the other reason we lost some of those games was our quarterback threw horribly untimely interceptions and then went on radio and talked about how it was my fault, Antonio Brown. Remember that one? The pick against Denver?
Ben is not without flaw here. I totally agree.
And so I think that is a big part. People are going to lay this at the feet of Mike Tomlin, and I, like you, think Tomlin's an excellent coach. I also understand why anything that happens with the team, some of it's on the coach, or else why the hell is there a coach? So some of this has to fall at his feet. But there is an element of how good would Popovich have been if Duncan was always undercutting him? How good would Belichick have been if Brady were always undercutting him instead of doing the opposite of even when they didn't like it, publicly staying in line and supporting the coach, letting the coach rip them more than they rip anyone else so there's a trickle down? This Tomlin's never had that benefit. He's always had to know that his quarterback of all players is going to be an X factor. And then he's got this wide receiver who, as talented as he is, has shown horrid judgment. I'm a guy, you've known me for 15 years. My entire life I've made.
You know horrid judgment.
Okay, that is correct.
But expert at
that. But I also, it takes a big bridge for me to get to blaming a player for a behavior. Because I think, yeah, young, rich, empowered, how would I act, right? Like, and that's always been how I felt. But even I would have known at that age, let's not Facebook Live something when Mike Tomlin could say anything. It's live to the world. Even I would know that even if I'm angry that it may be $80,000 missing from my condo, let's not allegedly throw furniture off the balcony, as Antonio Brown's alleged to have done, and almost potentially kill a small child. Like, these are all things we know, at least alleged to have done with the furniture thing. Like, he doesn't show good judgment. And the fact that he would skip the week of practices in what was a playoff game. If they win, they weren't necessarily in. But if they lose, they were definitely out. It was a playoff game. That's horrifying, and sports horrifying. And I don't know what Tomlin can do. What can you do? Well, all he can do is not play him, and which is what he did, and they damn near lost because of it.
The problem is that the best players for the Steelers are the ones that you cannot count on the most. It was Bell, Brown, and Roethlisberger. And when you cannot count on those guys to make the right team decisions, you get what you have this year.
But where's ownership?
Well, hold on. With those three, there's the sense of it's me over we. With those three more than anyone else on that team, because all three of them make very selfish decisions, intentionally or not. I mean, Big Ben's out there throwing other guys under the bus. Lev Bell didn't show up for his contract situation. AB obviously did what he did. But let's just stick to Brown for a second. What happens now with him moving forward? Can he survive on this team, or have we seen the last of Antonio Brown?
I think he can survive because he's so good, because he's so dynamic, and the Steelers have not had a history recently of jettisoning really good, talented guys unless they want too much money. They'll usually bring you back if it's just a character problem or a distraction problem. Remember, though, this. The Steelers have gone through a lot of talented wide receivers that were me over we guys, whether it was Santonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, go down the list. They've always figured out a way.
Mike Wallace.
They've always figured out a way to replace those guys. But boy, in this case, I think AB is so good, and they seem to have such a long leash with him that he'll probably come back. And it just feels like it's more of the same to me.
And it's going to be more of the same.
Well, I feel like the first time they can move him, they can't move him right now. But as soon as they can move him, they're going to move him. But with that being said, that usually means that you're rebuilding, because Ben Roethlisberger's been hinting at retirement for the last couple of years. So I feel like they were really accepting this because they felt like they can have one more shot. With looking in the AFC North and what they've been able to do with, you know, the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and with Baker Mayfield, I don't know if that window isn't almost closed, and we've seen the best years of Ben Roethlisberger and this Pittsburgh Steelers team consistently being in the playoffs.
This is, for this Steelers season, it is a systemic failure, starting with the GM and what happened with Le'Veon Bell, because even if you don't want to extend him, then rescind the tag and use that money elsewhere. To Mike Tomlin for losing whatever leash he had on the team, it finally letting go. To Big Ben with those weekly radio spots that today he's going to continue and God only knows what he's going to say. To Le'Veon not showing up to Antonio Brown. That's how a team goes from 7-2-1 to out of the playoffs. Only the third team ever, through 10 games, have a record that good, not make the playoffs. The other two, you know what happened to them? Their quarterbacks got hurt. 95 Raiders, 93 Dolphins suffered a season-ending injury to their quarterback. That's why they missed the playoffs. The Steelers have no such excuse. Every opportunity to make the postseason. They couldn't. And if there wasn't, if between Tomlin and Roethlisberger, there wasn't three Super Bowls and five appearances or whatever it is, one of those guys probably would be gone. But because they have built up that level of cachet with the team, they won't be. But they can't just run this thing back next year.
I'm surprised that they survived with this level of dysfunction to win as many games as they did to even, you know, be at this point. I just don't understand. Where's the general manager in this? Where's the owner in this? Because if he missed 2 days of practice, then I need ownership to come up, and we need to find him and bring him in and let him understand that we will take every dollar that we can out of your
ownership
pocket.
Ownership did reach out to him.
No, you find him. You got your NFL security. You can find exactly
find your
where he
iPhone
is.
App. You should figure out
find my wide receiver. Yeah, find my wide receiver.
I mean, you show up. Only way you can hurt Antonio Brown is by taking his money away from, you know, conduct detrimental. Right. I'm sure they probably may try and get that game check back, try and find him. But I'm trying to see where he could have potentially voided this contract because of his behavior, much like we see going on in Jacksonville. I'll see if I can try and get him out of there that way and get that salary cap relief back.
Damon, thanks so much for hanging out
with us. Happy New Year.
Happy New
Year.
Looking like Men in Black,
man. Day coming up. Why is a quarter of the NFL looking for a new head coach? That's next. This is First Things First.
When I was 10 years old and I didn't get anything for Christmas, and my mom sitting the family down and explaining what great things were going to come from our lives and everything, that was a Christmas that stood out in my mind. Just being thankful for what we did have.
I am grateful for two things. The girls that I have at home and the boys that I have at work.
That no matter what background you come from, you have commonalities with your neighbor. That's what makes our show work. That's what makes all of us work.
Oh, I think that deserves a hug.
Aww.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Welcome back. On Saturday, we got a big showdown, and the big D is Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. It's the NFC wild card game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific Saturday on Fox. and the Fox Sports app. Happy New Year's, everybody. So glad you're hanging out with us this morning. We'll get to the NFL coaching carousel in a second, but first, Gator Bowl down in Jacksonville, Florida. C.J. Riley of NC State makes the great catch for the touchdown.
His left hand being restricted, right hand goes up and gets it. No question it's a catch. That's an excellent play, C.J.
It's an NFL catch right there. It's a back shoulder turnover, put him on your back hip, levitation, like it.
Sticking with college football, trick play in the Holiday Bowl. Northwestern offensive lineman Trey Clark catches the pass, dives across the goal line for a 20-yard touchdown.
Fat man touchdown, Bart.
Fat man touchdown. Supposed to be fat man dance, but you see that defensive back. He knew where he was like. He's like, you know what? I want to live.
Trey Clark now with one more career touchdown than Bart Scott.
Ooh, hater in the house. And you.
Yeah, and definitely and me.
You didn't ask me if I scored in college. I did.
NBA Now Magic Hornets second-year guard Malik Monk takes off.
He didn't even need to jump this high. This is just showboat.
You ain't never smelt the air up there unless you was in an airplane. You don't know what that's all about.
Listen, I'm going to have to do the same thing with you that I did with Chris, which is bring in the video of me dunking in my basketball days.
What do you have? Five headbands on, two wristbands.
Me? I wore a headband.
You was that guy.
I wore a headband. Shaved head, too. Yeah, I was that guy.
Out there playing defense. Like, man, get this little gnat off me.
Absolutely. That is an excellent scouting report. That is exactly right.
All right, moving on to the NFL coaching carousel. It was a bleak day if your team underperformed this season. A quarter of the league now has coaching vacancies as the Bengals, Dolphins, Broncos, Cardinals all parted ways with their coaches yesterday. Marvin Lewis finally leaving the Bengals after 16 seasons. A lot of job openings out there. Nick, what do you make of the state of head coaching affairs in the NFL?
Well, some of these firings are just perplexing. Most notably the one in Arizona, where you give a guy 1 year, you know the team's not going to be any good. The quarterback gets hurt. You go with the rookie quarterback who the biggest knock on Rosen was. He was probably going to take, other than Josh Allen, maybe the longest to develop of any of those top four picks, and you fire him. Like, I don't know what you expected there. There are some other ones where you're like, well, it made sense. I thought Mike McCarthy had gotten a fair amount of time. But overall, just systemically, we're in a place now where Doug Peterson, he seems like a pretty new head coach, right?
Yeah.
There are going to be 20 coaches next year with less experience than Doug
Peterson.
Yeah. 14 of the 32 coaches next year are either going to be first or second year coaches. This is not a model for sustainability for the league, nor for these individual franchises. And I just wonder, where are the coaches going to come from? Like, if these guys aren't good enough, if Adam Gase, for example, isn't good enough, then why on earth do we think the quarterback's coach in Los Angeles is going to be good enough? It seems to me that there are, for some reason, GMs have more job security than they should, and coaches have not enough. And so what happens is GMs, they try to cover up from their team-building mistakes by laying it at the feet of the coach. John Elway had an amazing quote yesterday. I take full accountability for what's going wrong with this team. And by the way, this is not part of the quote. By the way, I take full accountability is firing everyone but myself. Like so that is Vance Joseph. What was he? How good can you be with that talent in Denver?
Trade Demaryius Thomas, lose Emmanuel Sanders.
Sign Case Keenum after having Paxton Lynch.
They were 6-6. They were in it too.
And so I don't know what a lot of these teams are doing, and I don't know what the league's doing as a whole.
Well, I know what they're doing. Coaching is the good old boys club, right? Sometimes, you know, you're at the bottom, then you become on the top, then you bring your friends up with you. You know, I think, you know, it's a lot of connections here. I think Marvin Lewis being fired is because they believe that Hugh is a guy that can operate in Cincinnati because he understands how that organization operates. I think when you look at Wilkes, you know, you look at the Todd Bowles fire, and they've been wanting Todd Bowles to be the head coach there for a couple of years. So what happens is it's recycling. They recycle a lot of coaches. It's very rare that you get a new coach in that hasn't been around for a long time as a coordinator, because what happens is general managers have been in organizations before, and they have their guys that protected them, guys that they got along with at other places, and they try and bring those guys in because they're going to go down. They want somebody that they can trust. That's why the relationship between Todd Bowles and McCagnan was never going to work, because he didn't hire his guy. You know, you look at John Gruden, you're getting rid of McKenzie. We knew, you know, speaking to Amy Trask, knew that was a bad relationship before John left the first time, so we knew that he was on thin ice. guys before. So that's what happens. It's the good old boys club, guys taking care of guys, but it's no way that Steve Wilkes should have only got 1 year at any place. Or, that's a bad job out there in Arizona.
And there is, it's uncomfortable to talk about, but there is a really uncomfortable racial dynamic to this. This league is over 60% black, and we got two black head coaches now?
Right.
About to have one black general manager? Like, is unless there is a belief amongst teams, and I would hope this isn't the case, that the black players who then become coaches just don't have the mental acuity to be a head coach, then how do we explain it? Like, what I understand the racial dynamics in the NFL aren't the same as hockey, but if we would think it was odd if 70% of hockey of NHL coaches were black. We'd be like, well, that's curious.
Right.
And the vast majority of the players are white. Like, in the NFL, it doesn't have the racial dynamics of the NBA, but it ain't that far. You are a majority black league, and the black coaches left are Mike Tomlin and Anthony Lynn. And Anthony Lynn, they wanted to fire him 4 games into his tenure. Started 0-4 in Los Angeles last year, and people were like, might have hired the wrong guy. Tomlin's on the hot seat, despite having a better record over his career than Sean Payton, who's never been on the hot seat, despite 3 straight losing seasons, 3 straight years missing the playoffs. Like, that is a part of this that the league's got to figure out.
Right.
Because the only people that hire coaches really are owners and some situations, GMs. But you've got to figure out why.
The Rooney Rule was a joke for years. They were just bringing a guy. Anthony Lynn was the guy just that they would bring in so that they could say they satisfied the Rooney Rule, knowing that they had no intentions of really giving this guy a serious look.
The two black head coaches left, both are in that situation. That Tomlin, nobody thought he was getting that job.
Yep.
Like, people can laugh at the Rooney Rule, say, why would you do this? You get token interviews. Well, Anthony Lynn and Mike Tomlin were both super long shots for jobs that wowed people in the process and have proven to be, I believe, excellent head coaches. I know for Anthony Lynn it's early, but I think he's an excellent head coach. Like, we've got to figure out why it seems like the glass ceiling for a lot of black coaches in this league is defensive coordinator. No black coach gets to be that sexy offensive genius. Maybe Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City is going to change that, but I don't know.
But just quickly getting back to the whole coaching carousel aspect, how much of this is, we love the concept of the Sean McVay. We're tired of that staunchy coach that's been in the league for years and years. We want to go out and find the next new, bright, young, sexy thing, that sexy play calling, whatever it is. But like what Nick said, they're just, now where are you going to find them? But how much of this is we want to go in the direction of where someone, say, like the Rams went?
Well, I think the league is a league of trends, but that's to say that it's not any young, bright, offensive minds out there. We'll see what happens with Eric the Enemy and what happens with some of these other coaches that, may put their name in a hat. Before a long time, it was Kevin Sutherland for a long time, but, I think he lost it. You think about at the college ranks. I haven't seen anybody pull any African-American coach up from the college ranks to be up and be the head coach.
Well, and as far as, they can say we want young, sexy coaches, but who was hired last year? So John Gruden was hired.
Yeah.
I feel like I know that name. Pat Shurmur was hired. I feel like I know that name.
Retreats.
Matt Patricia was hired. He's first-time head coach, but we know that story. If you are a coordinator for the Patriots,
you'll
get a head coaching at least interview.
Which is why 3 people want Josh McDaniels.
Exactly. And so Frank Reich he thought his time was over. Peter King had a great story about it. Frank Reich was talking to him last December, so 13 months ago, saying, man, I don't think I'm ever going to get my shot.
You can get the Maryland job.
Right, and it turns out maybe they got their right guy in Indianapolis. One of those young, sexy hires was Steve Wilkes. 2 years ago, it was Vance Joseph. They got a combined 3 seasons between the two of them with quarterback play no one should have to deal with for either one of them, and they're out. So I just think, I don't know that a lot of these teams have a plan. I do know this. It's no shock that the teams with the most consistency at coach, the Patriots, the Steelers, the Saints, the Ravens, the Seahawks, the Chiefs, the Panthers, those are the teams that almost never bottom out.
All right, we got to go. More sexy coaching talk after this. I'm kidding. Coming up, how slim is the Patriots' margin for errors this postseason? Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. We are going viral. Giannis Antetokounmpo is averaging a league-high 18 points in the paint this season. The 50 pounds of muscle he's reportedly put on since entering the NBA seems to be paying dividends. Now he wants a new challenge. Take a listen.
The Rock, what's up, man? 2 big fans here. We see what you're doing down in your Iron Paradise. We tried to bring an Iron Paradise to the NBA here in Milwaukee.
You know, you may look stronger than us, but we think we both listen more than you. Come visit Milwaukee.
That's your league MVP right now.
Get up there.
Yeah.
Oh, little.
Yeah, Bart.
Oh, I got that.
Look at that.
Get that in, baby.
Man, nice.
That's for the glutes. Glutes explosiveness. Right,
I understand
there,
what it's for, but I also, every weightlifting thing you say, you got that. You got that. Giannis would take you to the block and body you, man.
He's like 6'10".
Yeah, exactly.
You have to catch him.
And, of course.
And stronger.
But if we grapple, uh-huh. I'll put him on that neck.
What are you doing, Greco-Roman?
Let me tell you
with
something,
the NBA MVP?
Let me tell you something. I got a whole list of tackles that you're going to ask that I put him on a night-night list.
Just put him on a night-night list.
Giannis don't want no smoke neither. I chop that wood quick.
Bart Scott in for Chris Carter today. Thanks for joining us on this New Year's Day.
Better quit
Much
trying me,
appreciated.
Nick.
Time for stories to start your morning.
Makes
the NFL
so
playoffs are here, and Vegas gives the New Orleans Saints the best odds to win the Super Bowl. That's Super Bowl 53. Nick, let me tell you what that means. So the Saints are plus 225. Mm-hmm. That means if you bet $100, you could win $225.
Yeah.
Just wanted to.
Thanks, Jenna. When I get the $100 back, is that including the $225? Oh, wait, you don't know that.
I don't know
okay.
that.
Okay.
You're going to add taxes.
The Saints
into that?
Should be the favorite. No, you don't pay taxes on gambling. When it's the whole point of gambling. Tax free income.
If we went over $10,000.
Okay. Zip it for a second. The Saints should be the favorite. They had home field advantage, and unlike the team with home field advantage in the AFC, they don't have a glaring weakness. Like the Saints, I know they're often sputtered down the stretch. They can play A-plus level football in all phases. They might be the only team in the league that can say that.
Yeah, they are. They're the most balanced team that can ground and pound. You think about Alvin Kamara, but you think about Ingram coming in that four-minute offense, being able to take the ball away. We know Drew Brees, and now with Ted Ginn, they're going to have those explosive plays again. You know, Ted Ginn, you never know if he's going to catch it, but, you know, he's about 50-50, so throw him more than four.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on. Talk LeBron James, still one of the game's greatest players in year 16. He recently said that beating the Warriors in the 2016 finals made him the greatest player of all time. Nick, is LeBron right?
That was the moment. It was. I never had said he was greater than Michael Jordan or even greater than Kareem.
You're not saying it now, right?
Prior to those finals, but those finals leapt him over both of those players. It was the greatest three-game stretch in the history of the league against the greatest team in the history of the league. And he's not done, but he is right. Since that moment, he's just been widening the gap.
MJ. I don't know what's wrong with him. I think he hit his head. I think he drunk too much last night.
Who, MJ did?
No, you. Oh, I think you drank. I'm just talking to MJ like it's okay.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Okay. All right, more NBA news now. James Harden has been on fire lately. Dropped 43 last night, giving him his fourth straight 40-point game. The Rockets have now won 10 of their last 11. Nick, put Harden's hot streak in perspective for us.
From a scoring perspective, it's one of the three greatest streaks in modern NBA history. Jordan had a streak similar in the late 80s before the Bulls got really good. Kobe had a streak similar in the first couple years without Shaq, that when the Lakers weren't very good, when the year Kobe averaged 35 a game. Harden's doing it, scoring at that level, over 400 points in a 10-game stretch. But while his team has won 10 of 11 in this stretch, while he's also giving you 9 assists per game in this stretch, and he's doing it, Bart, playing a style of basketball that it's like Harden and Daryl Morey created in a lab themselves and no one else is doing. He's averaging a combined 29 three-point attempts and free throw attempts per game in this stretch. That's never been done before by anyone by far. Last night, he scored 43 on 8 makes. I don't even know how that's possible, except I watched it happen. He has somehow rocketed himself back in the MVP conversation for the fourth time in 5 years.
And arguably, I guarantee he should have at least 2. Mm-hmm. But what my concern is, he's carrying his team without Chris Paul, who stumbled out of blocks, and the whole, Carmelo Anthony debacle. Yep. But what I get concerned with is they're asking him to do too much, and we see him struggle in the playoffs at times because I think his minutes are up too high, and he's having to carry too much of the workload. They're going to have to try and figure out how to get him some help. In between, I know they wish they could have got Ariza back in the trade. I think he went out to Washington.
Yep.
They're going to have to figure out a way to make a trade to try and restrict some of his minutes in the second half. One of the best things that happened to LeBron, I believe, is this groin, because I feel like they were putting too much mileage on him as well.
Give time off. And you're right, Harden, the one knock on him is lack of playoff success. But they have needed every little bit from him during this stretch. He's playing 39 minutes a game. He's averaging 41 points, getting you 7 rebounds, 9 assists. He is playing. That's over a 10-game stretch. That's an eighth of the season. It's not a small stretch of basketball. It is unprecedented what he's doing to go along with the team winning as much as it is. One last note. Last night was the eighth time in his career. This is according to Kevin O'Connor. Thought it was a great note. Eighth time in his career he scored at least 40 on fewer than 10 made baskets. No other player in NBA history has done that more than 3 times. Like, he just has such a – you don't have to love watching it. It's not the most aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball, but it is effective, and right now, offensively, it's unstoppable.
All right, let's get back to the NFL now. They ended the 2018 season on a high note, beating the brakes off the Jets. We're, of course, talking about the Patriots. The months prior, however, more of a medium note, not so high, not so great, but also not so much of an issue since they still earn themselves a bye for the 9th straight season. Tom Brady says he knows the Patriots will have to be at the very best heading into the postseason.
This time of year, it's just figuring out a way to get the job done. There's a lot of good football teams playing right now. Some teams have played better early in the year, some teams have played better late in the year. And, this time of year, it's you don't play a good game and that's your season. And you're watching other teams move on. The awareness is heightened. The focus is heightened. The execution needs to be that way. And, we have a big challenge. Whoever we play is going to be a great football team. We're not going to be able to afford anything less than our best.
So that's the truth. They're not going to be – if they're not out there buttoned up and perfect, they're not going to be able to really compete. How slim is the Patriots' margin of error, Nick, this postseason?
The slimmest it's been since 2009. Ooh. And not coincidentally, 2009 is the last time they were one and done in the postseason. That was when Ray Rice and the Baltimore Ravens started the game with an 80-yard touchdown run and never looked back. I think they won that game 33-7. I don't expect the Pats to get routed like that in this postseason, but here's what I know. I know that for the first time this decade, in the 2010s, you go into a playoff game against the Patriots feeling like you only have to take away one thing from their offense, and if you do it, you will be successful. And that's Sony Michel. They're 9-0 this year when they get 100 yards rushing, 2-5 in games. They don't. That's never been the case over the last decade. Last decade, it's been, okay, if we worry about James White and Deion Lewis out of the backfield, then we still got to worry about Gronk over the middle. There was the Gronk in late Aaron Hernandez years. There was always a counter to the counter. They don't have that right now, and that's just one side of the ball. The other side of the ball, while the Patriots' defense seemingly never makes – they never have too many penalties, and they never have a lot of mental gaps like some teams do. They don't have a guy. It's like, wow, we're going to have to double-team him. There's no one on the Pats you have to double-team, and there's no one in the Pats secondary that you feel like can shut down one-on-one a number one receiver. It's a lack of overall talent to go along with a deteriorating, still good, but no longer great Tom Brady that has what Tom Brady said exactly correct. They have to play their best game to beat any team in these playoffs.
Their experience is scary, right? And you have to go to Gillette. And what happens is they'll manufacture ways to get big plays. They'll find a way to get Hogan, downfield, because that's what's the one thing that he does well. They're going to put James White in position to be able to exploit, when you have bad linebackers and, linebackers that can't cover in space. And where Gronk is going to come to life is in the red zone, because he's going to draw that attention there, because he's just a big enough body to box you out. So you're going to he's going to draw that attention there. They're going to, you know, motion from empty, bring him back, see if you're in man-to-man coverage. And Tom Brady's just going to have to make, you know, one or two big plays down the field to make you respect him, because we understand that they're going to take the air out of the ball. They're going to play that ground and pound type of game, and then you're going to look up, and it's going to force your quarterback to be perfect. So if you don't beat yourself, you'll have a chance, but I don't trust, you know, I fear 12 having the ball with the last possession with the game on the line.
Yeah, I think it's still three things. I think they'll outcoach you. I think maybe not throughout the whole game, but in the situations, maybe in the fourth quarter, maybe those quick drills down the field that matter, Tom Brady's going to step up. And it's what you said yesterday. There's not a better team that prepares themselves more for situational football than the New England Patriots. And that is more important now than ever before because they don't have the big targets on offense.
All that's true. What's also true is this. Five teams this year finished the year with a better record than them. Two in the AFC. The only reason the Patriots got a bye is because of the NFL's unfair playoff format, where if you have the second best record but the best records in your division, you're relegated all the way to the five seed. It should be Chiefs 1, Chargers 2, Patriots 3. Like, they had a lot of good fortune into extending this bye streak. And now because of that, let me put it like, it's only because of that I give them a chance. If they were the three seed and they had to play three playoff games to get the Super Bowl, that they guaranteed to have to play one of those games on the road, I would be striking them out.
Well, what are you doing now?
Right now, I think, okay, if the bracket holds and the Texans beat the Colts, which they're favored to do slightly, that is a great matchup for New England. The Texans have never beaten the Patriots in the playoffs. I think in franchise history, the Patriots have won 8 of 9 against that team. Deshaun Watson's never played in the postseason.
Bill O'Brien
is a Belichick disciple. We know what the record there is. And the Texans have a glaring weakness in the offensive line and inability to run the football. I think if the bracket holds, the Patriots are in great shape. But if the Colts upset the Texans, Bart, and that means the Pats then get the Ravens or the Chargers.
They don't want that.
I would favor either of those teams. I'll tell you right now. If the Ravens or the Chargers are the team that goes to New England. So if the Colts beat the Texans, barring some devastating injury that we don't see, I will pick either of those teams to go into New England and beat the Pats.
And it's the same thing, right? Because it's getting pressure on Brady up the middle in the A gaps, because he's shown that his legs are starting to leave him and he can't really elude the sacks like he used to. He can't buy the time like he used to. He's never been fleet of foot, but he's been great in having pocket awareness. And now we've seen him struggle a little bit with that. And those are two teams that can give him some havoc up the middle and make him forced to try, you know, improvise and do those off-schedule plays.
I think that the first playoff game of the year, Saturday at 4:30, Texans-Colts, that game is going to determine whether or not the Patriots make an insane 10th consecutive AFC championship game. Because if the Colts win that game and the Patriots have to then play the Ravens or Chargers, I believe they'll be one and done in the postseason.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, what do the Cowboys need from Zeke to beat the Seahawks? Brian Westbrook here to discuss that next on First Things First. Happy New Year's, everyone, and welcome back to First Things First. Look who's here, former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook joins us this morning.
It's called Shake and Bake.
You good? Family's
I'm great.
Good?
Happy New Year.
Happy
you as
New
well.
Year.
Thank you for
too.
Waking up early for us on New
very
Year's
early,
Day.
Very early.
All right,
early.
We got a lot to talk about today. Let's start with the Cowboys. They closed out the regular season with a solid win over the Giants. Good win for the team. Good performance from their quarterback, Dak Prescott. Now, he'll need another one next week against the Seahawks. He'll also need Ezekiel Elliott. Zeke won the rushing title despite sitting out Sunday's game. Jason Garrett said the move keeps him, quote, fresher moving forward. All right, Brian, what do you think the Cowboys need to get out of Zeke if they are going to beat the Seahawks?
Well, I think when you talk about Zeke, you just get the same thing every game. You get 150 yards, you get 120 rushing yards, you get 30 or 40 receiving yards, and you just feed him.
Yeah.
Allow him to control the pace of the game. I love the fact that they gave him a week off, though. And I just know as a running back, that week off means an extra yard or two on almost every carry.
Oh.
That means you're able to get to the edge. You're able to make people miss. You're able to get in space and now get those extra yards. Allow your legs to get fresh. Andy Reid, routinely, if we were already in the playoffs, he gave us that week off, allowed us to have fresh legs coming into the playoffs. That makes all the difference in the world. Screen game, the run game as well. Big, big time week off for Zeke Elliott.
And you guys were one of the best teams ever early in the postseason. Like, I understand people seeing Andy Reid and it had some struggles later in the postseason, but you guys weren't a one and done.
No.
Team. Four straight NFC championship appearances, Super Bowl appearance in there. So, like, we were talking during the break, it wasn't just Zeke who got the week off. We know the linemen, technically, they did get the week off. But the defense kind of did as well. When you only play 15 minutes time of possession on the field, I've never seen a stat like that. Right. I can't remember the last NFL game where one team had the ball for 45 minutes like Dallas did. So the defense is going to come in fresh to a degree, which is important because quietly this last month of football, this Dallas defense, which through the first 13 weeks was allowing 18 points a game, it's been allowing 25 points a game, been allowing 50 more yards per game. The defense needs to sharpen up because they are about to go up against the best rushing attack in the NFC in the Seattle Seahawks.
One of the things that I love that Jason Garrett did was that he played Dak in this game. He gave him 44 passing attempts just to get some confidence, just to say, listen, we're going to need to be able to throw the ball at some point in the playoffs. Let's get some confidence in week 17. Allow you to go out there and try to complete some balls. Get some confidence as a player. We know what we're going to do with Zeke. We're going to give him 25 carries. We're going to give him 5 or 6 touches in the passing game. But we need our quarterback to go out there and to be able to throw the football. 44 passing attempts, 4 touchdowns for Dak Prescott. That was impressive. Great coaching call from Jason Garrett.
Now, during your run, you guys went against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers routinely, and they were a physical outfit. Yeah. And you guys were more of a zone finesse type of run style. How did you get that respect? Because you know that, you know, Zeke and the Dallas is going to have to get the respect from that physical defense that's going to come in, mainly Bobby Wagner. How did you say, okay, I'm going to have to make sure that, you know, straight ahead, no fair dodging on some of these linebackers early in the game so you can get that respect?
Well, for me, it was all about making guys miss, getting to the edge, not getting that full shot on the body. But for the offensive line, it's a mindset. And it starts the first day of practice. It's a mindset. We have to be physical and nasty up front. If we want to win, we have to win in the trenches. Andy Reid preached that every single week. For Dallas, it's no different. One of the better offensive lines in the league. Be physical and nasty in the trenches. That leads to winning in the playoffs.
Unless you fall behind early.
That's
and
right.
Then you're going to have to give the ball to Dak, and you're going to have to say, go do what you've done, sort of done down the stretch. How much do you trust Dak Prescott to do that?
Well, that's why I brought up the point about Jason Garrett. That's why you give him 44 passing attempts in the final game of the season that is almost meaningless. That's why you do that, because at some point in the playoffs, you're going to have to put up 30 points. You're going to have to score. You're going to have to throw the ball 35 times. That means Dak has to be prepared. You give him those 4 touchdowns, 44 attempts, that's huge for him.
If they beat Seattle, they're playing either the Rams or the Saints. We'll see how the bracket falls. I do not think 13-10 is duplicable.
No.
Especially because it's on the road wherever they play, either in the Coliseum or in the Superdome. And I totally agree with you that I thought Sunday's game was the most meaningless game you could have from a player, because the one question for Dallas, to me at least, is the quarterback and the passing attack. I like their defense, even though it's been a little shaky down the stretch. I love their running game. Jason Garrett's fine. Like, I don't think he's the greatest coach, but he's not. I don't think coaching's going to kill him in the playoffs. The question is the passing attack. So it's not only they threw for 380 yards and 4 touchdowns, arguably statistically the best game of his career. It was 4th and 15, down 7. The strike to Cole Beasley on the run, following it up with extending the play on the 2-point conversion. Even if I still don't have a ton of faith in Dak Prescott, he's got to internally feel like, man, I'm Dak bleeping Prescott. I'm 13-3 my rookie year. Should have been league MVP. Got us the playoffs. Went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
Last year, we were relevant. We were right there, even though we didn't have Zeke. And this year, look at what we've done again. Started 3-5, won 7 of 8 down the stretch. Like, he's got to be feeling the best he's felt about his ability all season. And I think that matters. And for defenses, now all of a sudden it's like, wait. Like, Blake Jarwin is someone we have to at least pay attention to. Like, there's different things on tape Seattle now has to deal with during the limited time of the week.
For quarterbacks in the playoffs, it's about experience, composure, and confidence. And you gave Dak an opportunity to get some confidence. You gave him some experience in his last couple years playing. I think this is just bodes well for exactly what he wants to do. Seattle's not going to come out and throw up 35 points. Now that allows your passing game to develop a little bit more, give it a little bit more time.
Can you fear this Dallas team? Do they instill a sense of any of that with them? I know they have Zeke and Dak has played well, but you just always feel like are they a team that you worry about their defense and you worry about them running the ball?
Well, the one thing that I love in playoff football, be able to run the football. be able to stop the run and play good physical defense on the outside. Dallas has that ability to do that across the board. I love teams that have that off, that opportunity. And when you look at Seattle, they almost could do the same thing. Number one rushing team in the league. They play great defense, and they're physical. And so this is going to be a good battle this Sunday.
I just don't know. I think advantage, coaching advantage goes to Seattle. I think quarterback, Seattle. I think run game goes to Seattle, experience Seattle. I just don't know how this Dallas team figures out a way to win. I think they can be in it because, it's, you know, Seattle's never going to blow you out, but they wear you down physically and mentally on both sides of the ball. And that dude over there chewing that gum knows how to coach his butt off.
Dallas has been a tremendous home team. I would give them almost, if this was 4-5 in the other direction, I would give Dallas almost no chance to go on the road in Seattle and win this game. What I will say, though, is as far as Seahawks, they are the Cowboys, just a little bit better version in almost every area. They don't have a running back as good as Zeke, but they have a more potent overall rushing attack. As good as Amari Cooper has been, Doug Baldwin has shown you repeatedly he's a true number one receiver. We know Russell Wilson is one of the greatest playoff quarterbacks and just one of the greatest overall quarterbacks in the league. And you mentioned Pete Carroll, man. Like they have, to me, the better units. But home field, it's tough to go on the road and win a playoff game. And Dallas has that going for him, and they have the confidence of what happened over the last 8 games of the season.
All right, Brian, stick around.
Six of them, right?
They won 7 of 8 down the stretch.
Coming up, we'll talk your former team. Should the Eagles stick with Nick Foles, even if Carson Wentz can play? That's next.
You won 6 road playoff games?
Yeah, bro.
That's a lot of road playoff games. Why weren't y'all better in the regular season? Oh. Get some home playoff games.
Why don't you ask him again about that touchdown?
I'll tell you who my quarterbacks were.
Under the bus. Eat it, Sanchez.
Saturday, it's a big showdown. In Big D, as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Happy New Year's Day, everyone. We're back here with Brian Westbrook, and we are talking Eagles and the most popular backup quarterback in the league, Nick Foles. He did win their last 3 games. He did get them into the playoffs. And while Carson Wentz still hasn't been ruled out for the postseason, some are wondering if Philly should stick with Nick. We wonder that every day.
Doug Peterson
was asked about this yesterday.
Is it fair to say or safe to say that Nick's going to be a quarterback as long as you win?
For this week.
I mean, is there any scenario where...
There's no guarantee we're going to win this game.
I understand. I'm just saying if.
You know. Yeah, I'll evaluate next Monday.
Can I get you started this?
Yeah.
Right.
I know. Thanks. Thanks for trying.
It is Doug Peterson pulling the Bill Belichick of press conferences.
Except he's smiling at the end.
Yeah, because he couldn't hold it.
They just love coach talk. They just say whatever.
He's it's a little more verbose. All right, Brian, should the Eagles stick with Foles, or you think they go to Wentz? What is the decision that Doug Peterson has in front of him here?
To me, there's no decision at all. Absolutely no decision. You have a Super Bowl-winning quarterback that's playing well. All season long, 16 games, you're trying to perfect your team. You're trying to look for that gas to add onto the fire to make this thing an inferno, try to make this thing hot. And they finally found this for their offense in the last 3 weeks. The Rams, the Texans in the last game last week against the Redskins. They found this for the offense for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's Nick Foles. He's a guy that continues to make this ball roll. This offense looks totally different. Why would you ever change that? The momentum is rolling with this guy. You should never change that. And just imagine, if you're a veteran in this locker room, and you say, we're rolling right now, we're playing well, this is maybe my last year, Jason Peters, Malcolm Jenkins, Chris Long, all these older guys, Michael Bennett, and you're saying, listen, we're going to take out the guy that's had our team rolling and looking good for a quarterback that's been hurt. And at this point, Carson Wentz may be the future. The present right now is Nick Foles.
Well, what do you have to do to – what type of conversation as a coach do you have with Carson Wentz, who probably is a healthy scratch, because you may have to depend on him. And what does that game plan look if Nick Foles with those bruised ribs go down and you have to go to a backup or have to go to Wentz?
It's simple. Listen, Nick. Carson's playing well. Our team is playing well. This is what I'm saying to Carson. It's simple. Nick is playing well. Our team is rolling right now. And if that doesn't change, then you'll be sitting on the bench. And hopefully, you're our future. We understand that. But at the same time, we have to play for the present right now. We have to keep this thing going. We have a chance at getting back. We have to take advantage of that.
So here's the thing. We know Carson Wentz isn't playing this week. We know that. The only way there's another game is if they go to Chicago and beat the best defense in the NFL, certainly the best defense in the NFC, and the Bears.
In a tough road environment.
In a road environment, the biggest underdogs of the weekend. So, of course, you're not then, if they do have another game, benching Nick Foles, who would have then won four in a row, would have then won seven consecutive elimination games dating back to last season. What I want to ask you is this, though. How far does Foles have to take this to change the conversation about who the future is? Like, what does Nick Foles need to do? Is there anything he can do, and what is it this postseason to where this offseason, when they're starting at a $20 million Nick Foles option, that instead of declining that option, letting him go elsewhere, they pick up the option and they field phone calls on a Carson Wentz trade?
Yeah, in my opinion, I still think Carson is the future, no matter how well Nick Foles plays. But if Nick Foles goes out and wins another Super Bowl, then the conversation changes.
So it has to be when. What if he gets you to the Super Bowl, gets you to the championship game?
I think that may be the point as well. I mean, if you get him to that Super Bowl game, then that conversation changes. And it may be that you trade Carson, or even if you trade Nick, a lot of different things going on there. But I mean, you have to have that conversation if he gets you to that game, of course.
I really think for Eagles fans, this is simple. And for Carson Wentz, by the way, I would not want to get put back in this lineup, because you are going to be you're a 6-point underdog this week. If you win this week, you're going to be an even bigger underdog the following week. I think they are going to lose either this week or the next week against the Saints. I just think those are better teams they're up against, and it's on the road. I don't think this Eagles team would have gone to the Super Bowl last year as the sixth seed, having to play road playoff games. I think if you're Carson Wentz, the worst thing that can happen to you is Nick Foles beats the Bears, and then you get your job back, you get your head kicked in by the Saints, and everyone's blaming you.
Right.
You need for the city and the fans to see Nick Foles lose a playoff game. I think it's as simple, if Nick Foles gets to the Super Bowl, then you have to have a real conversation. Anything short of that, you're going to go with the bigger, stronger, faster, more talented number two overall pick, who's also, by the way, cheaper. He has that going for him as well, because he's still on his rookie contract.
But that's the reason why I don't think if you win this football game against the Bears and then have to go to New Orleans, that's the reason why you can't go back to Carson. You don't want to put that type of pressure on this young man. That's also the same reason why you can't bring Nick Foles back next year. You don't want that guy sitting on the bench
when
things go wrong for Carson. Fans are cheering Nick Foles, get him back in the game. You don't want that type of pressure for your young future of your franchise type of quarterback.
No one right now is saying it's got to be Carson Wentz. I think everyone agrees that Nick Foles should play this Chicago game. I think everyone agrees play the hot hand right now, because they saw what playing the hot hand did last year. Who knows if lightning can strike twice, but it struck once with this team, and you kind of just let the beast keep going.
But they have a better chance with Nick Foles in the lineup, because I believe for some reason it's this connection between him and Peterson. This offense has a rhythm, and that gives this front seven an opportunity to hunt. You talk about Fletcher Cox being able to come on and how aggressive he was in the pass rush against the Washington Redskins. What happened is they were converting first down, so it allows the defense to make sure that they can hunt. You know, they can let these pass rushers, you know, be able to fire off and protect this secondary, because this secondary is a liability, and they're playing much better because of the front seven. The front seven is playing better because they're being able to get to the passer because of the rest. All comes back to St. Nick.
Why do you think this team, which has not looked like the defending champion team that most of us thought they would be all year, is playing better, not just in the passing game, in all phases of the game since Nick Foles took over? Why do you think that is?
A couple things is going on. They have much more of a balanced attack. Their offensive line is playing much better. Jason Peters, who has been hurt most of the season, is playing better at the left tackle spot. Lane Johnson is upset that he didn't make the Pro Bowl. He's playing much better. Brandon Brooks has been a Pro Bowl player all season long. So in the run game, they've been more productive. Doug Peterson has committed to that run game. Then when you look at the quarterback position, Nick Foles is getting the ball to everyone. He's getting everyone involved. And just imagine what receivers feel if you don't touch the ball for a quarter or for a half. You don't have a target. You're out of the game. But Nick Foles has done a great job of getting Alshon available, getting opportunities for Nelson Aguilar, still getting Zach Ertz to football, getting the ball to Darren Sproles, who's been healthy and helped his football team the last couple weeks.
Is that he goes through all his reads, or is that the play calling?
I think it's part of the play calling. Doug Peterson has done a great job of getting his team ready every single week to play. But also, you have to give these guys a big-time opportunity down the field. Give Alshon an opportunity to jump over top of someone and catch the football. Nick has done that, where there's been times where Carson has failed to do that, and now the offense looks much more fluid when you get everyone involved.
Carson had become – he had gotten such a rapport this year in particular with Zach Ertz that it seemed like that was his first read, and Ertz was typically open, so it was his only read. Mm-hmm. But you're not not going to get chunk plays typically from Zach Ertz. You got a lot of catches for 8 yards, catches for 9 yards. And the problem with that is, and we see this with any team that doesn't have chunk plays, it just takes one sack. Yep. One holding penalty, and all of a sudden your drive is stalled. With Foles, man, he is chucking that sucker deep. He's letting Nelson Aguilar make plays, Alshon Jeffrey. We haven't even said the name Golden Tate, because Golden Tate has been a guy who really hasn't been a major factor, but we know how good he can be. It's what makes this team dangerous, and it's why, as much as I think the Bears are the best team in the NFC, not named the Saints. But, man, the Bears got to be looking in this game saying, man, I sure wish we were playing the Vikings. Right. Like, I think the Bears are maybe wishing that the Vikings would have somehow won last week against the Bears, so they would be the sixth seed instead of the Eagles.
If you're an Eagles fan, the one thing you have to look forward to, you're playing one of the best defense, if not the best defense in the league. I think a lot of people would say the best defense in the league. You have some experience. That's the one thing that the Chicago Bears team does not have. Experience in the playoffs, being able to win. How does Mitch Trubisky respond to his first playoff game, first opportunity to go out there and win in the playoffs? For an Eagles team that went to the Super Bowl and won tough games last year, that experience, and you've been in the playoffs, you understand how it is. That experience certainly does play a part into it just a bit.
And I love Lane Johnson against Mack, and I love Peters against Floyd. I think you run at the little guy and see what he can do, see if he can handle that smoke.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.